Hello and welcome to Her ADHD podcast with me, your host, Chelsea Fields. Okay, so it's episode 2 today, guys, and what I want to talk to you about today is the different types of ADHD, how they can present in females, and I want to do a little bit of a deep dive into education, how ADHD shows up in the classroom with little girls, and why is it that this was missed for so long. So, ADHD types. I did not know there were different types of ADHD until I started obviously researching. I thought that ADHD meant you were either hyper or you weren't. So if you're hyper, you could have ADHD. If you are not hyper, then it's not ADHD. Like, it was very black and white in my brain. And I think that it's very black and white in most people's brains. You're either ADHD because you're hyper or you're not. And that couldn't be further from the truth. So one of the ADHD types is inattentive. You have ADHD inattentive and ADHD hyperactive. Somebody can also be ADHD combined, which means they present with both traits from both types of ADHD. I have been diagnosed with ADHD combined, although I predominantly present inattentive. I do have some of the hyperactive traits as well. I had no idea I had any of these traits, by the way, the hyperactive ones. I was 100% sure I had inattentive ADHD, but I was quite shocked when I got my report that said I was ADHD combined. And then it stated some of the hyperactive traits that I displayed during my assessment. And they were all true. Like, I read through them and was like, oh yeah, I do that. So a lot of females present with ADHD inattentive. And this is why I personally think ADHD in females was missed for so many decades. 30 years ago, ADHD was a boy thing. It was a naughty boy thing, wasn't it? So everyone's got that naughty boy in their class who's bouncing off the walls, he's climbing over the table, he's lobbing a chair, he's throwing things around the room. He has ADHD. He is the naughty little boy of the classroom. And if you didn't present in that hyperactive, manic way, then you didn't have ADHD. However, what we're now seeing is that people who present with ADHD inattentive have the same hyperactive disorder, but they internalize it. So they might look pretty cool, calm and collected on the outside. They might not be necessarily bouncing off the walls or even fidgeting at all. But internally, the voice in their head, their internal dialogue, their thoughts are completely chaotic. So quite often somebody with inattentive ADHD will present as the daydreamer. They're always in their own little world. They're always staring out the window. They're not paying attention. They have really poor focus. They are disorganized. They live in chaos because they just can't figure out where to start when they have a list of things to do. And this presents in class. So when you're given a list of things to do in class, I say, okay, class, today we're going to do this, this and this, off you go. The ADHD inattentive is like, I just don't know where to start. And that doesn't make sense to a neurotypical person, especially a neurotypical teacher 30 years ago. Like, what do you mean you don't know where to start? It says on the board, number one, do this, number two, do this, number three, do this. But there's too much. My brain is absorbing all of that information at the same time. And instead of just starting, it sounds obvious when you say it out loud, just start at task one. I can't. I'm in complete ADHD paralysis. I don't know where to start. I'm looking around the classroom. Everybody's already writing. Everyone has just got on with it. And I am just still sat here. And now 10 minutes have passed. And I'm now behind everyone else. And I still don't know where to start. And I'm starting to panic. But I'm silent about it. I'm not kicking off, I'm not shouting and screaming, I'm internalising it and I'm just sat silently thinking, I don't know what to do, I don't know where to start. So as the lesson progresses, you are further and further behind. I used to find that I'd written the date and the title. That's probably as far as I'd get in most lessons, the date and the title. And, you know, you're looking around and seeing everyone else has just got on with it and you can't figure out why your brain isn't able to do it. And it's not that you don't understand. It's so difficult to verbalise. It's not that I don't understand. I just can't get started. The ADHD paralysis is real. I struggle with ADHD paralysis as an adult, big time. And looking back, I struggled with that the whole way through school, especially as a really, really young child. I never ever completed a task. I never ever was able to just crack on and start doing what I was told to do. So that was like a huge part of my ADHD as a child, not completing tasks, ADHD paralysis, not knowing where to start when I'm given a task, and just looking around the room being really self-conscious of the fact that 29 other children are just cracking on with it and I'm the only one sat here not able to do it, and I know I'm going to get in trouble for it. So my anxiety is starting to bubble. I know I'm going to get told off, but I don't know where to start. And if I do ask the teacher, they're going to get cross with me because they're going to say, I've just spent the last 15 minutes explaining this, Chelsea, at the board. Now, the problem is I've probably zoned out during those 15 minutes. Not probably, I have zoned out during those 15 minutes. I haven't taken in the information. So now while the teacher's gone and sat back at their desk, they're expecting everyone to just crack on with it. I'm sat with only half the information because my brain zoned out halfway through the instructions. And I'm now just looking at a board that is full to the brim with instructions or tasks that have been set. And I'm trying to absorb it. And it's just not going in my brain. Sometimes I would be able to copy somebody's work who's next to me. I did that a lot through primary school. I would just look at the person next to me and see what they're writing, and I would copy it because I don't know where to start, so I'm just going to copy theirs. And obviously you get caught doing that. Again, you get in big trouble. You're so lazy. Do your own work. It's not because I'm lazy. I just didn't know where to start. And teachers didn't accept that as an excuse. It's always the same narrative of, I've already explained this, you didn't listen. Another way that girls present with ADHD in the classroom is being the chatterbox. How many of you were the chatterbox like me? I could talk and talk and talk and talk. And that's where my hyperactive disorder is starting to come out, because it's already internalized, it's in my brain, and I'm going to let it out through talking. So I'm going to talk to whoever you sit me next to. You know, like when you get into class and they're like, okay, you can all choose wherever you sit, and you choose to sit next to your best friend, and it lasts 10 minutes and they're like, Chelsea, I'm going to have to move you. I've asked you repeatedly to stop talking and you've just continued. But I can't help it. I physically can't help it. I can't make my mouth stop moving. So, you know, you choose your best pal to sit next to. In primary school, I would always choose to sit next to my best friend Jade. and Jade was able just to get on with the work, and I'd be able to copy her work as well because she always seemed to know what she was doing. But I would sit next to Jade and I would talk and talk and talk, and the teacher would be like, okay, Chelsea, I'm going to move you. And she would think that, you know, if I don't put her next to another girl, she might talk less. So she'd sit me next to a boy. And she's like, I'm going to sit you next to a boy. And it would be like one of the quietest boys in class. And I would still talk. I would talk to everyone. And I'm laughing now, but one of my really vivid memories is when I was in, I think I was maybe in year 4 or year 5. I was about 9 years old. And I'd been moved twice for talking. And the teacher said, she just lost it with me one day in class. She was just like, I am so sick of this. It doesn't matter where I sit you, you talk. You talk to everyone that I sit you next to. Chelsea, if I sit you on my desk, you even talk to me. and it was true. I did. I spoke to everyone. And she said, it's like you have verbal diarrhea. And the whole class burst out laughing. I laughed as well, because that's what you do. Everyone's laughing. Let's just laugh it off. But I remember being so sad. I was so sad after. I remember crying that day and just thinking, like, what is wrong with me? Why can't I stop talking? Like, I know not to talk. I don't know why I keep talking. I physically can't control it. And when you've been, like, called out in class and the teacher's made a joke of it because she's just so exasperated with you, and, you know, 30 children laugh, it is embarrassing. Of course you laugh as well. But deep down, you're humiliated and you're frustrated with yourself over it. But that non-stop chatter is a little girl's way of releasing that crazy manic dialogue in her head. And when she speaks out loud, the voice in her head is a little bit quieter. She can't hear it over how much she's talking. I'm laughing, but it's not funny. It's something that is a huge trait in girls with ADHD in the classroom. But what's actually happening is the ADHD's brain has no executive function. A neurotypical person's brain with executive function, it controls their emotions, it sustains their attention, so they have like a good focus on things. They have the ability to start a task without procrastination. Executive function helps with being organized. It helps with timekeeping. It helps you plan and prioritize, so you know what's important and what part of the work to start first. An ADHD's brain doesn't have that. We have executive dysfunction. So all of those things just don't come natural to us. And while the teachers are getting completely exasperated by me in class, I physically have no control over it. I cannot change the way my brain is wired. So you getting angry with me over it isn't going to make me learn to do it or bully me or scare me into doing the correct behaviours. It's just making me internalise the feeling of I am not good enough, I am inadequate, I can't do what other people can do, and the anxiety is bubbling up and over. And how that anxiety presented for me as a little girl was tummy aches. I always had a tummy ache, always before school. So, you know, there's nothing wrong with me on weekends, but school mornings I have a really bad tummy ache. And that was anxiety, because I had a lovely friendship group at school. I wasn't bullied, I wasn't picked on. There was nothing deep like that going on. But I knew that when I got to the classroom, it wasn't ever a happy day. It wasn't a happy experience. Every day I left the classroom feeling stupid, feeling slow, feeling like I just can't do what other people can do. And I hated school. If you ever asked me at any age of childhood, do you like school? I mean, I'm sure my parents were mortified when we were out at, you know, family events and things, and people would say, oh, do you like school? And I'd go, no, I hate school. Because I did hate school. I had the most amazing friends and was really lucky to, you know, have these really strong friendships. And I'm still friends with those girls now. So shout out to Jade, Emma, Chloe, Laura, Steph and Bernie. They are the girls who went through school life with me, and I'm so blessed to still have them in my life to this day. But I wanted to touch on that because I didn't hate school because I had no friends. And I think people think when you've got friends, how can you hate school? Like you feel accepted, you fit in. But it's more than that. Because although you've got that friendship group, you've got that support network, in class you don't fit in. In class you feel different, and you spend most of your time in class. You get like, what, a 15 minute break in the morning, an hour break at lunch where you get to hang out and be with your friends. But there's 6 hours of being in the classroom. There's 6 hours of feeling dumb and lazy and all of those negative feelings. So that overrides the good friendships that you've got, like the emotions you've got towards the friendship, even though they're so positive, that is overrode by the negativity that's in your brain. So you naturally do get this thing of I hate school, and no matter what day it is, you know, you don't have good days and bad days. I hated school every day. I never wanted to go to school. And that was my experience from the age of 4 to the age of 16. I just hated school. And I think that most kids say they don't like school. Of course, they'd rather be little free spirits running around, I don't know, with their friends at home, gaming, whatever it is that they like to do. But it's very different to say, I don't like school, to say, I hate school. Hate is such a strong word. It's such a strong emotion. And I can genuinely say I hated school. And when I've spoken to other ADHDers who have been diagnosed late like me, they have the same narrative. I hated school. So I've touched on a little bit of primary school and how ADHD affected me in the classroom in primary school, but I want to touch on high school. And the reason so many females are undiagnosed is because we mask. So masking is a form of essentially hiding your natural behaviours. Females are much more aware of the societal norms. Boys, I don't know if they don't really care or if they just don't pick it up. I mean, this is a female podcast, so I'm gonna say it, ladies. We all know what men are like. You know, they don't notice things that females notice. If there's any men listening to this, they're gonna come for me. Come for me, I'm waiting. But yeah, men don't notice the things that females notice. And I know that's a very, very sweeping statement. I say that out of love towards, you know, like my husband, my dad, my brother, my granddad. It's things that I've spoken about to the women in the family, like, he didn't even notice. And they're like, no, no, he's the same. So I don't know if that comes into play with masking. Girls are known for masking much more than boys do. Boys just be unapologetically themselves. They just go, this is me, this is how I behave. Girls don't do that. Girls are like, oh, hang on a minute, is that a bit weird? Is that weird? Okay, I'm not going to do that ever again. Or you might do something once and everybody laughs at it, and a female is like, I'm never doing that again. You know, like, we take on the societal norms and we will heavily mask, especially going through high school. So in primary school, it's a little bit different. You're kind of, you know, you're only little, you're doing what you do. That first year of high school is pivotal, isn't it? For who you become as a person, because you're absorbing everything around you. Okay, what is cool? What is not cool? What shall I do? What shall I not do? And very quickly, an ADHD female in high school will shut down. She will shut down and she will heavily mask. And those traits that she has are even more internalized. So people aren't picking up on them. They've never seen them before. And then when you come forward and you say, oh, like, hey, I've just had an ADHD diagnosis, people are like, what? How would you have ADHD? Well, actually, I've been masking for 35 years. So, you know, here we are. And it's been so funny, actually, opening up to my school girls and saying to them, like, you know, I'm going forward for an assessment, I think I have ADHD. They were so supportive and I expected nothing less. They are the most beautiful souls. As a group, like, we've never had a fallout. We've been friends since we were like 4 or 5. We've never had a fallout. Everyone just gets on like a house on fire. And yeah, we're just a very supportive friendship group. And when I opened up to them and said, like, I'm going for the assessment, they were instantly like, oh my gosh, like, what a great idea. If you feel like that, you know, you do have ADHD, then yeah, go for it. Then I came back to them and said, I have my diagnosis. And again, so supportive. And they remember how I was at school. They remember I was always getting told off. I was the rebellious one of the group. I was the naughty one of the group. And yeah, we have so many stories as a group. Like, do you remember that time? And some of my moments that I now know were ADHD moments in the classroom, they remember very vividly as well. And now as adults, they can look back and be like, oh yeah, like, that was definitely an ADHD moment. So I mentioned the executive function. And that the executive function in a neurotypical person, one of the things it controls is your emotional side, like how to control your emotions. And as an ADHDer, you have executive dysfunction, so you don't have control of your emotions. And that rang very true for me within our group. I was the most emotional person in the group. I would very easily burst into tears or just be so, so angry or cross, not at the girls, but at whatever happened, if something happened in the classroom, especially as I became a teenager. I didn't blow up as much in primary school. I would internalise the negative emotion and wait till I got home to be upset. And as I became a teenager and, you know, the rebellious side started to come out, I would just blow in class. I was rude to teachers and I would often be asked to leave the room. And yeah, my friends remember that. There's times where I would completely act out in class. And, you know, like as a friendship group, as teenagers, it's funny afterwards. But looking back, like it was a complete ADHD meltdown moment. One of the moments I remember very vividly, and I know the girls remember, was in year 11. So September, year 11, first day back into the final year of high school. We're all in our form rooms doing what you do on the first day back. And I had all my gold chains on. I was a proper chav. I loved it. I loved all my gold chains. I'm probably still a bit chavvy now, to be honest. I had like this big gold Chelsea necklace. I had a big gold cross. I had a big gold chain with a diamond-y C on it. I was all about the gold chains. And obviously in school, you're not allowed to wear jewellery. And I knew you wasn't allowed to wear jewellery, but there's this thing where you become very opposed to authority. I don't know if that's because as a child you saw that the authoritative figures in the classroom always put you down. You create this thing where you're very opposed to doing anything they say, and anything they tell you is like the rules. You have this impulsivity to break them. So yeah, I didn't take my chains off, got into class. You know, you're supposed to have your tie pulled up to the top and 12 stripes on your tie, but I've got like three stripes. You know, like when you have that big fat chunky tie, top button hanging open, gold chains hanging out, big gold earrings. And we got into class and we were sitting doing whatever we were doing for the first day of term. And the form tutor came over and he saw that I had my chains on and, you know, just doing his job, said, "Chelsea, it's the first day of term. Like, come on. First day of term, first day of being like in your final year of high school, you might be setting an example. You know, your uniform's important. Sort your tie out. Why have you got this big fat tie with three stripes? Get the skinny tie made, make 12 stripes, you know, get your top button done up, take your chains off, give me your chains. They're now going to be confiscated." And I wouldn't give them to him. I would not hand them over. And he was like, "I'm not arguing with you on the first day. Give me the chains. You know that they're not allowed to be worn in school. You shouldn't have even come into school with them. Give me the chains." And I was obviously giving him the attitude like, "No, I'm not giving them to you. You'll lose them. You'll lose them." Yeah, we got into a row over the chains. I refused to take them off. And he said, "You know what? I'm not arguing with you. Like, you know better." He said, "Just get out. Go to the head teacher's room." And I got up and threw my chair, not across the room, but do you know, like instead of just sliding it nicely behind the desk, I sort of picked it up and then lobbed it back down sort of towards his feet. He was fuming. He was just like, "Get out." And off I stormed to the head teacher's room. And he said to me, "You're going to be suspended today on your first day back. How does that feel?" And I was like, "I don't care. I actually don't care. Good. I'd rather be at home anyway." That was the narrative I had. "I hate school. Suspend me. Good. I'm not allowed to just stay off all the time. My mum and dad won't let me. So suspend me and then I get to go home." And that's horrendous. Like when I look back, I was such a problem teenager in those last 2 years of school. And it did get picked up on and I had to have meetings and I got given a mentor because they were just like, "What is going on with you? You don't care about anything. You don't care about your work. You don't even care about your exams that are coming up. Like you break the rules." And yeah, and my response was always like, "Yeah, you're right. I don't care." And looking back, like that was a cry for help. That was because I'd spent the whole of my younger years being made to feel not enough. So then you come into high school and you're like, "Well, that's fine. I'm going to just act like I don't care," instead of like trying and failing or asking for help and then being told I don't need help because I'm just lazy. I just won't bother. I just won't try. But obviously you meet up with the girls after school and and we're all laughing over it. Jade used to sit behind me. Laura and Emma were sat to the side of me to the, I can remember, I can see the classroom in my brain. They used to sit on the left-hand side of me and they were just like, "What the hell? Like you threw the chair." But yeah, it was like, whenever I had these like blow-ups and acted out, it wasn't to entertain anyone. I genuinely was that angry and I couldn't control it. So I'd blow in class. And then after class, when you'd meet up with your mates, you would laugh about it because it was amusing at 16, 15, 16 years old. It was amusing, that behaviour. But I never did it to be amusing. and that's the point of me telling you this, the whole reason I would blow up like that is because I had no control over my emotions. So like I said, I had the negative talk in my head saying like, nobody helps you when you ask for help. They all just tell you you're lazy because you don't listen. And yeah, just act like you don't care and just don't do the work. And then we're in the same boat either way. So because of that like internal negative dialogue, then when the littlest thing does happen, I would just blow. Like a normal person, a normal student would have just been like, oh, I forgot to take them off. They'd just hand them over. But I had to make a big song and dance about it. And I would just like point blank refuse to hand them over. And this happened on a regular basis with my chains. And I never learned from it. I just would continue to do the same behaviours. But I couldn't control that. So I would just blow, completely blow. I didn't care that 30 other students were watching. Didn't care what the consequence was. And looking back now that I know that I have ADHD, I can see that that is emotional dysregulation, because you don't think of the consequence until after. Like after it's happened, you're like, oh man, mum and dad are going to kill me. He's going to ring home again. But you don't think about that in the moment. And again, a normal student would just hand the chains over because they know what the consequences are. They know it's not worth ending up in a huge row. It's not worth having the phone call home to your parents again. Like, just save yourself the bother. Just hand the chains over. But my brain doesn't think about the consequence. It just feels what it feels and it just blows up. And that is like a common narrative throughout my whole school life, especially my teenage years. Probably from like year 9 onwards, year 9, year 10, year 11. So I guess I was age 14, 15, 16. They were like my real troublesome years. And I remember having a meeting with my one-to-one mentor, and she discussed like sleep patterns and like, are you getting enough sleep? Because obviously I was so grumpy. I was always grumpy. I was always miserable. Not with my friends, with the teachers. Like I just come across as like grumpy, miserable, bad attitude. And she'd be like, what time do you go to bed? And I'd be like, I don't know, 1 a.m. And she'd be like, why are you going to bed at 1 a.m. on a school night? Well, I don't know, because I can't sleep till 1 a.m. And again, that's a sign of ADHD. So tired in the mornings, takes a long time to get up and get going and, you know, get the momentum into daily life. And then by the afternoon, I might have like perked up a bit, but by evening, I'm in full flow of energy mode, so it's easy for me to stay up till 1 a.m. In fact, I can't go to bed before that because my brain is just in like energizer bunny mode, and that's really, really common with ADHD. And obviously looking back, that wasn't known about ADHD. So I can see that that was also one of the ways ADHD affected my life in childhood, or well, being a teenager. And you know, like your parents are going to make you go to bed at a certain time, but by the time you're 16, like they're usually in bed before you. They've got to get up for work too. And if you're in your room, like they don't know what time you're awake till. So I guess that looking back, there are so many of my behaviours that I can see were predominantly ADHD traits. And not only is the like blow up reaction part of the executive dysfunction, the emotional dysregulation, it's also a part of the impulsivity. Your behaviours are impulsive. You just do them and you worry about them after. And I was very impulsive in class. So as I got older, obviously as a younger child, I've mentioned, I kind of tried to just blend into the background. I was obviously the chatterbox of the classroom, but I wasn't the one who had a hand up to input in class or anything like that. And as I got older, I would blurt out answers. this is actually something my son's now struggling with in class. He's also awaiting his ADHD assessment. But, you know, the answer, so you just blurt it out. And, you know, they've said, oh, you know, who knows what the name of this is? And it's just common courtesy, isn't it? Put your hand up and the teacher will choose someone and go, okay, Chelsea, what was it? But I don't put my hand up, I just go, it's blue. And she's like, Chelsea, why do you do that? And I'm like, don't know, but it is blue though. And she's like, yeah, I know it's blue, but you know, there's 10 other people with their hands up, put your hands up please. And that was something I really struggled with, actually putting my hand up to say what I thought. I was just said it as soon as it came out of my brain. And that is again the impulsive side of ADHD. Obviously in primary school you are just in the classroom with the teacher, with your peers, and it is what it is. Like, you feel uncomfortable, but it's tough. As you get to high school, you're a little bit older and a little bit more wiser, so you're able to think, well, that's my worst lesson. It makes me feel so uncomfortable. I'm just not going. So that's when the bunking starts. I was always bunking lessons. And do you know, like, other students would be like, oh, no, I'm not going to bunk. Like, you know, I don't want to get caught. And I'm like, I don't even care. I don't care if I get caught. I either go to class and get in trouble and get kicked out, or I just bunk and I get in trouble anyway. So there was just this narrative of, like, I can't ever do right. I can't ever win. So you really just stop caring. So when you get to, is it age 14 or age 15, you have to choose your options for your GCSEs. And one of the topics I chose was art, not graphic and design. That was like something separate. I was just into art, like sketching and painting and that kind of stuff. And you were given a black portfolio to carry around, like a sketchbook kind of thing, and bring to all your lessons. That's what you do all your work in, that's what you did all your coursework in, and that went towards obviously your final award, your final grade of your art GCSE. So when it came to September of year 11, year 10 you're supposed to have completed, you know, the main bulk of your coursework. Year 11 you're going into your exams. The teachers rang my parents and were like, Chelsea's done zero coursework. Zero. She's done nothing. So, you know, English, math, science, whatever, she's done none of it. And at this point, like, there's no point in sitting a GCSE when you haven't done the coursework. The coursework is a big percentage of the mark you're given overall. So my parents were like, what? She's done none. And they were like, no, none, except for art. Her art portfolio is absolutely incredible, outstanding, out of this world. She has never ever forgot to bring it to a lesson. So with ADHD, obviously I've spoken in the first episode about having the memory of a goldfish. I was always turning up to lessons, you know, haven't got my pencil case, haven't got my workbook, haven't got this, haven't got that. I never forgot to bring my art portfolio, my sketch pad, never ever forgot to bring it. Brought it to every single lesson, and I would sit it on my desk and in whatever lesson I was in, and I would remember to pick it up and bring it with me to the next lesson. Like, I never lost it. I lose everything. I never ever forgot to bring that sketch pad anywhere. And I think teachers see that. That annoys them more, because it's not like, oh, you know, she's so scatty, she forgets all of her homework, she doesn't do the coursework, she never remembers to come prepared to lessons. Like, there's this one particular lesson that she's doing amazing at. She's not behind on her coursework. In fact, she's gone above and beyond on her coursework. She always arrives to class fully prepared with her full art kit. Like, and they then make this decision that you are lazy in their lessons and you don't care about their lessons, because how can you manage to be completely role model student in one class? I mean, I say role model student, I say that loosely. I was still the chatterbox of the class. But how can you perform so well in one class and so horrifically in another? And that is down to the executive function. So with an ADHD brain, you have executive dysfunction. Your brain does not prioritize important things, and if something is of no interest to your brain, you just won't do it. And that infuriates some people who don't understand neurodivergence. They're like, we all have things that we don't like, but we have to get on with it. Like, that's part of life. You have to just do the stuff you don't like. No, it's not that I'm making an active decision not to do it. My brain physically won't let me. My brain is literally like, no, boring, not doing it. I can't make myself do it. Trust me, I am just as infuriated with myself as you are with me. Like, I wish I could sit down and just smash out that science coursework, but it's of no interest to my brain. So I'm literally like, no, I'm just not going to do it. I can't control it. And a neurotypical person who has executive function, their brain is logical. So they're like, okay, the science homework is really boring, but I'm in the middle of my GCSEs. You know, this coursework goes towards my final award, my final grade. I have no choice. I have to do it. So they sit down and they do it. But the ADHD brain just can't. They physically can't do it. They're like, I can't do this. It's so boring. I would rather put pins in my eyes. And I think the sooner we realise that, the sooner people would be more understanding and more kind to ADHD people. It's such a, it's not a decision we've made. We need people to understand that. We haven't just gone, no, I'm not doing that. Like, I physically can't do it. I can sit down at a desk with that science coursework and I'm like, come on, come on, I've got to get this done. I've got to get this done. And my brain is going to look at everything but the science coursework. It just isn't going to engage with it. And my parents had a meeting with the school and they signed some forms that gave the school permission to keep me behind every night until I completed the coursework. I was obviously fuming, but they did the right thing. Like, I'm a parent now myself, I get it. I would do the exact same thing in their shoes. And I had to stay behind every night for weeks and weeks and weeks on end. But I got the coursework done. And do you know why? Because there was one teacher, and I'm going to name her Donna Doogie. She's the OG of teachers. She was so empathetic. She made you feel seen. She made you feel heard. And she made you feel like you were enough. She was the only teacher in my entire life that had said to me, Chelsea, you're so clever, you're so intelligent, like, I can see, like, what great things you could do, and you just get your head down and, like, do a little bit of work. She believed in me. And when I got kept behind for all of those weeks, I had one-to-one with her. There wasn't just me kept behind, like, there was a lot of us that hadn't done any coursework. We were all kept behind in those evenings, and there would be several teachers floating around the computer room to help you get the coursework done. But you had one-to-one. That's all I ever needed. She would sit down by my side and she'd, like, get the essay brief out and she'd be like, right, let's take a look. Okay, we're writing about Jekyll and Hyde. Do you remember this part of the book? And I'm like, no, can't remember. Okay, that's fine. She'd get the book, flick to it, right, have a little skim through this, and then you're going to tell me, like, what did you see in that character? She broke it down in a way that my brain understood it. And she was reading through my essays like, Chelsea, these are amazing. You're so clever. And it still makes me emotional. I'll never forget that teacher, because she just built me up. And because of her and her belief in me and the time she gave me, I managed to complete all of that English coursework. I got really good grades on it. And I was so shocked with myself, like, oh my gosh, like, I thought I was thick. How did I get an A in that essay? How did I get a B in that essay? And I obviously went on to do my GCSEs. That coursework was went towards my final grade, and I came out with good grades. And that was all down to Donna Doogie, Mrs. Doogie. I will love her forever. I haven't seen her in such a long time. But we need more Doogies in the world, because just that one teacher believing in you is enough to help you believe in yourself. So when you've got that hard exterior, and you're masking the behaviours, and you're just going around saying, I don't really care, I'm not doing the work because I don't care, people think that you're tougher than you are. They don't see the anxiety, they don't see the lack of self-worth that you feel. And something that really stands out to me is when I was about 15 and I went into my science class, and the teacher had set out the desks into a different shape to usual. Like, they used to be just dotted around the classroom, and he had set them in kind of like a C shape, like around his desk, so that he could see everyone. And he said, wait by the door, I'm going to tell you where you're sitting. This is a new seating arrangement. So we all waited by the door and he got out his bit of paper. And one by one, he called people to sit down. Anna, Ben, Ian. And he went round the classroom, sitting everyone on this C-shape table. And I was last, me and two other girls. And he said, take a look around. You are sat in order of intelligence. So like up here, we've got the brightest people in the class. Over here, we've got the people who, yeah, they're doing okay. And over here, we've got the thickest people in class. And he pointed to me. I gave him some very harsh words that I don't wish to share on this podcast. I gave him the middle finger and I grabbed my bag and I got up and I left. And I went to Miss Doogie and I cried my eyes out. I absolutely bawled outside her class. And she was like, oh my gosh, what's wrong? What's happened? And I told her. And she was furious. And I remember her marching down there to him and saying, like, what the hell are you doing? What are you doing to these young people? Like, what are you doing crushing their self-esteem? And that, like, that memory is a core memory for me. I've never, ever, ever forgot it. I can see it in my brain as if it happened yesterday. And I know in this day and age, like, well, I'd like to think that wouldn't happen anymore. There's so much more put in place nowadays for, you know, students on the spectrum and students in general of what teachers are allowed to do and what they're not allowed to do. But that was so damaging. That was so damaging as a 15-year-old to be told in front of all of your peers you're the thickest person in that class. And it really does plant a seed in your head that that's who you are, that's what you are. And you can't help but go into adulthood with the internal narrative of, I am thick, I am the thickest person here. And I've just done a second degree. I have a degree in British Sign Language and I've just done my second degree in interpreting and translating. And I remember saying to my tutor, so I did this degree over the last 18 months. I remember saying to my tutor in a one-to-one, I am the thickest person in this cohort. And she was horrified. She was like, no, you are not. Oh my gosh, why would you say that? Don't feel like that. But I am, because when we get set, you know, these essays and stuff and they have to be sent off for marking and everyone just smashes through them. I cannot get started for weeks on end. We might have been given it 3 months ago. You can bet your bottom dollar I'm not going to do it until the day before it's due, because the ADHD brain needs pressure. We need urgency and we need a deadline to make us sit down and do something. And then the added pressure causes, obviously, unnecessary stress. And we smash out the essay to the best of our ability. And when it comes back, it's not good enough. The marks are low. The feedback is negative. And you're just left thinking, like, well, of course it's negative. Of course I got crap marks. I'm thick. I've been thick the whole way through school. I remember starting this degree, I was 34 when I started this degree, and I remember being a little bit nervous because education isn't my thing, I'm not academic, and I remember sort of talking myself into it, like, well, you know, that's because you were a child, and that happened because you were a teenager and you had a bad attitude and, you know, you didn't really care about doing well and being successful, but now you're an adult and you've chosen to do this degree. Like, you're not being forced to do it like at school when you're forced to do something you don't want to do. You've chosen this degree. You absolutely adore your career. I'm a BSL interpreter. I am so passionate about it. So I was like, this is going to be fine. Like, this is something I've chosen to do. It's something I'm passionate about. But as soon as the degree started, I was hit with all of the same roadblocks that I had during education as a 5-year-old, as a 15-year-old. And that really solidified for me that there is a problem with my brain. I was like, why am I still like this? Why am I still like this? Why can I still not do the things? Why can I not stay focused? So my lectures were 3 or 4 hours long on Zoom, and there would be maybe 12 of us on a Zoom lecture with the tutors. and they would be recorded just in case somebody had missed the lecture and they could go back and watch it. I would zone out so badly during those lectures. I could feel myself doing it, and you're on camera, so I was so aware of, you know, making it look like I'm listening, and I wanted to listen. Like, I love my job, I love learning about this, but I just can't. You cannot make yourself focus when you have ADHD. No matter how much you want to, your brain just cannot get into gear some days, or any day. Like, this wasn't just sometimes in my lectures, this was every lecture. I was struggling to stay focused, to stay in the room. Like, I'm completely zoning out. I can feel myself zoning out. The teachers were amazing. They would say, okay, go get a hot drink, go and move about, go have a wee, whatever. And that would help. But I would quite often have to go back and try and rewatch some of the lectures. Like, if there was a specific part about one of the essays we needed to write, I'll think, oh, I'll go back and I'll rewatch that, because I can't remember anything that was said about it. So I would pull up the lecture, and it'd be obviously the video of Zoom to rewatch the bits that I needed. And I noticed that, like, all of the people on Zoom, there was 12 students, two tutors, so that's 14 of us. Everyone just sat completely still for hours. Like, there wasn't any major movement except for my little box, where I am all over the place. I've got my legs crossed, then they're uncrossed, then I would kneel up on my chair so I could sit on my knees, but obviously then you get sort of dead legs, so you have to move again. I would sit with my legs actually up on my desk. I would move my laptop off the desk onto my lap, then it would go back to the desk. I moved constantly, and that was a real aha ADHD moment, because I thought, okay, there's got to be something more to this. Like, it's not that I was just a 5-year-old, I was just a 15-year-old. It's not because I didn't find school interesting. Like, I am now 34 years old. I am doing this course that I've chosen to do. I'm so passionate about it, and I still cannot focus. I still cannot complete the work that's been set for me, and I am still zoning out during the lectures and during any kind of lesson. I've done that my whole life, and I thought, oh, you know, I'm probably bored because it's maths, or I was bored because it's science. No, I actually love this topic, and I'm still zoning out. So I think that's when it became so obvious to me that maybe there was more to the educational stuff that I went through. Maybe there was more to it. Maybe it was ADHD. So that was a pretty heavy episode 2, but I feel like touching on education was so important to do nice and early within this podcast. And like I said to you guys in episode 1, so much of my trauma is rooted in my education, and I wanted to deep dive into all of that. I think that giving people an insight into some of the things that happened within my educational experience helps them to understand why I am the way I am. And it can help you understand why somebody might have such low self-esteem, why they always believe that they're not enough, why they suffer with imposter syndrome, thinking that, you know, they're basically winging it and people think they're doing well and they're successful, but that it's just by pure luck, they're not actually good at anything. Maybe you're a teacher listening into this podcast. Maybe you've got a little girl in your classroom who is the daydreamer. She is the chatterbox. She always seems to be not listening. She's never on task. Maybe she is presenting with ADHD in your classroom, and this will give you some knowledge to support her better. And maybe you'll start to be more aware of how ADHD can present in females, but also how ADHD presents in the inattentive type. So I hope the episode was insightful. I hope that you guys continue to join me. I have so much planned for this podcast over the upcoming weeks. I'm going to deep dive into how ADHD presents in marriage, relationships, friendships, social situations. I'm going to discuss ADHD meltdowns and burnout, how mental health such as postnatal depression is quite often actually ADHD that's just been undiagnosed. I want to talk about the natural remedies that are available, some of the ones that I take that really help just to calm my racing brain. So yeah, there's so much to come, lots and lots already planned, some of it's already recorded. So keep tuning in and do keep contacting me with your feedback. I love hearing from you guys. So you've been listening to Her ADHD podcast with me, your host, Chelsea Fields. Good night, God bless.